Roughly Speaking with Dan Rogics is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy welcomes best-selling author and former science reporter Dava Sobel. In her new book, The Glass Universe, Sobel presents the story of women's landmark contributions to astronomy. Friday, November 10th at 7 p.m. More at the Ivy Bookshop or call 410-377-2966.
From the Baltimore Sun in Baltimore, Maryland, I'm Dan Rogics, and this is Roughly Speaking, episode 321, for Thursday, November 9th, 2017.
President Trump imposed a Muslim ban and then began a campaign of terror against the immigrant community. And when the General Assembly wanted to enact reasonable protections for our immigrant neighbors, Governor Hogan dismissed it as absurd and outrageous. I passed an executive order last April that states that no county employee, including the police, can discriminate based upon someone's immigration status.
That's the voice of Kevin Kamenetz, the Baltimore County executive who's seeking the Democratic nomination for governor in 2018, one of several candidates hoping to challenge the popular Republican governor, Larry Hogan. In the interview you'll hear in a moment, Kevin Kamenetz criticizes Hogan on several fronts, including his support of Donald Trump's immigration policies. Some background on that. Back in March, Hogan said local law enforcement should do more to help enforce federal immigration laws. He criticized Maryland jurisdictions, including Baltimore, that had rebuffed requests to aid immigration agents in rounding up people in the country without authorization. Hogan called efforts to limit that cooperation absurd, and he vowed to veto what he termed a sanctuary bill in the General Assembly. It turns out the governor did not have to do much to see that bill flounder. The legislation would have done little more than codify a Supreme Court ruling that prohibits police officers from stopping a person to check immigration or citizenship status. But even so, Democratic leadership in the Maryland Senate, the Senate President Mike Miller, the chairman of the Judicial Proceedings Committee Bobby Zirkin, had little enthusiasm for the bill and did not fight for it. The bill went nowhere, and that's with Democrats in the majority in Annapolis. Maybe some of them will take note of Tuesday's election results and the clear public disapproval, or maybe distaste is the better word, for Trump and his policies. My conversation with Kevin Kamenetz took place Wednesday, the day after voters turned out in force, most notably in Virginia and New Jersey, to elect Democratic governors and state legislators, and in Maine, where voters approved a referendum to expand Medicaid coverage to thousands of low-income people under the provisions of the Affordable Care Act. Electoral results widely seen as a rebuke of Trump and the Republican efforts to repeal Obamacare. Kevin Kamenetz, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dan.
First question I ask every candidate, why are you running for governor?
We need a governor who's going to stand up for Maryland values, but also a governor who's not afraid to roll up their sleeves and sweat the details and do the hard work to get things done and not just make empty promises. As county executive, I've improved our schools, I've protected the environment, I've created jobs, all without raising the tax rates. That's my record of accomplishment, and those are the real results that I'll bring as governor.
All right, we'll come back to that in a minute. A couple of things in the news I wanted to ask you about. First of all, your reaction to the elections on Tuesday. A lot of people woke up on Wednesday morning a little surprised to see results in Virginia and New Jersey in particular.
I think it was obviously a good result for Democrats. But in Virginia particularly, they elected a governor who did kind of work his way through the ranks, kind of a middle-of-the-road guy. And I think that people are recognizing the value of experience in government. As we see in Washington, president and governor are not entry-level positions. Here in Maryland, we defeated two Republican mayors in Annapolis and in Frederick. And in Frederick, it was a council member there, an alderman, who again had that experience. And I think in Annapolis, it was interesting. You had a person who was a business person, but someone who also spoke of common sense, but had a vision and a passion for new ideas. And I think voters respond to that.
You don't think that just Democrats eager to vote for a Democrat in response to Trump?
Well, I'm sure there's a country full of those people. I mean, it is frustrating. And the real issue for Democrats, particularly in Maryland, is not that there was some surge of Republican voters, because they kind of peak. You know, it's a 2-to-1 Democrat-Republican ratio. What happens in the past is that when Republicans do get elected statewide, it's a failure of Democrats to turn out. And I think more than anything else, President Trump is motivating voters to say, hey, a lack of vote has consequences, and I do want to turn out and make sure that the best candidate wins.
I want to turn to one other newsy item because you are still Baltimore County Executive running for governor. Trade Point. This is very interesting. The development that's taking place at the old Sparrows Point where the Bethlehem Steel used to be for years and years. We got some news there today about Amazon.
Yeah, it's exciting. And Dan, you know me as a tell-it-like-it-is guy. I had the problem of inheriting a situation where Bethlehem Steel plant closed during my tenure early on, and we lost 2,000 jobs. And a lot of folks wanted me to urge those workers on and tell them that steelmaking still had a future. But I looked those steel workers in the eyes and I said, look, steel is not coming back. So let's focus on what I think can be that next generation of jobs. And now with Trade Point Atlantic, we have 17,000 jobs coming to Sparrows Point with the likes of Under Armour, FedEx, Pacia Automotive, and now we just announced today the arrival of 1,500 fulfillment jobs for Amazon. And these are the jobs of the next generation that we can have right here in Baltimore County, but also servicing the entire region.
Amazon already has a distribution center on Browning Highway where the General Motors plant used to be. Now they're going to move into Trade Point. There's also a location in Cecil County for Amazon. Does that diminish the chances of Baltimore becoming the landing place for the second Amazon headquarters, which has the promise of some 50,000 jobs?
I think just the opposite. It's obvious that Amazon is familiar with Maryland and they like locating here. And one of the enticements that we worked with them in getting them to Trade Point Atlantic was how we're going to help push a workforce train to them filled with people who are eager to work there. So it involves some job training and also resolving some transportation issues to make sure they have a reliable workforce. But the bigger picture is these are the fulfillment centers. It just shows how vibrant Amazon is as a company that they need so many of them to locate. And obviously their owner and the Washington Post owner, Jeff Bezos, I think has surpassed Bill Gates as the wealthiest individual in the world. So it's an amazing company. But the headquarters building, what I call Amazon 2, is also a once-in-a-generation opportunity. So we certainly could have, and by the way, we're talking about 50,000 jobs that all pay at least six figures each. So we certainly could have selected some sites that were worthwhile in Baltimore County, but I actually wrote an op-ed in The Sun where I said, look, I'm the Baltimore County executive, but the best place is actually Port Covington, and the entire
in Baltimore City.
In Baltimore City, and the entire state should rally around that as the sole opportunity site, and that would really make an impact, I think, for Amazon to say, hey, everyone's in agreement here. And it really would be the right location right next to Under Armour for the same reasons that Under Armour wants to locate at Port Covington. You know, it has the high-tech feel, the waterfront feel, an urban pitch to it. These companies want to attract young talent. And young talent is interested in that type of environment. So we check off many of the boxes that I think Amazon wants. The only thing we didn't check off is the mass transit, direct mass transit link. And sadly, that's because Governor Hogan does not believe in mass transit.
Since you brought up transportation, there's a couple of issues here. So I'm going to veer away from my usual format, which is to do some bio on you. We'll come back to your biography in a moment for folks who aren't familiar with Kevin Kamenetz. But two transportation issues there. One is the Red Line, which is, I think, what you're alluding to, Governor Hogan's decision to kill that a couple of months after the Freddie Gray unrest here in Baltimore City. It was in June 2015, a project 10 years in the making that the governor said the state could not afford. Where were you on Redline? I want to clear up exactly. Did you support Redline, or did you think the plan was needed to be changed? Where were you before Hogan made that decision?
We always supported the idea of expansion of mass transit. And we were working very closely with Social Security Administration, where the Red Line would have had its terminus, to make sure that their needs were being met. I was also working with the owners of Security Square Mall, where a stop also would have been, and we had plans to pursue an office building on that site that would have upgraded that shopping center.
You had reservations about it, didn't you?
No. The only hesitation I had was that at the very last minute, the state came to us and said, well, you have to pick up 10% of the tab. And I said, well, in all these years of conversations, you never alerted me to that need, and I'm devoting all of our capital dollars to record school construction in Baltimore County, and I don't have that available money immediately. But ultimately, we did send a letter making that commitment to chip in 10% share.
Which was something like $50 million? It was a good chunk of change for the county.
Absolutely, yeah. So we made that commitment at the end of Governor O'Malley's term.
So you had no problem with the plan for the Red Line?
Well, listen, everyone could have had different ideas on the best route, but what was important was this was the consensus route, and this had gone far enough along the process around the finish line when we had our great members of Congress in Maryland, particularly Senator Mikulski as chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the Senate, to line up $900 million of federal money that was there. All we had to do was put it in our own hand. Governor Hogan went in without any study, without any discussion, cancels the Red Line, gives back the $900 million of federal money, and then takes the $900 million of state money that was to be used for mass transit solutions in the Baltimore region and disperse it for rural highway projects. So, he had no plan B, and we're still stuck in traffic.
I mean, would you revive Red Line if you were elected governor?
Well, absolutely. I want you to think about this. Every world-class city, London, New York, Philadelphia, D.C. has an integrated multi-jurisdictional mass transit system, and that's what we need. So I'm young enough, or old enough, rather, to remember that when the Baltimore subway and the Washington subway were planned, we each were going to have parallel systems. And D.C., although they have service issues because of a lack of investment in maintenance, they have an integrated multi-jurisdictional system. We have two independent lines that aren't enough. And the whole idea here is that mass transit isn't just to improve the bus system. And I know you're an avid bus rider.
What's available.
Well, Secretary Ron, Governor Hogan's transportation secretary, dismissed Baltimore as just a bus town. So the idea isn't just to improve the lives for people who ride the bus. It's to attract the choice rider. The choice rider is the individual who's on the beltway, stuck in traffic, and would like to have an alternative other than using their car. But we have none because we have such a crappy system, quite frankly. And for the governor to eliminate the Red Line, again, it wouldn't have been a panacea, but it would have offered an east-west component that we don't have. And more importantly, it would have added an extra layer to a system that could be built out.
You would make an effort to revive it?
It has to be revived if we want the city to move forward and the entire region. Our mistake has always been that we've painted this somehow as just a Baltimore system as opposed to a regional system. Howard County needs a link that leads to Baltimore, to the Baltimore region. Harford County, quite frankly, needs a link that leads to the Baltimore region. If they have it, they'll use it. So mass transit not only offers the opportunity to get people to work, but it also offers economic opportunity. So I want you to think of each of those stops in West Baltimore, which could have been investment areas. I took in Owings Mills the terminus of the heavy rail, which used to be a surface parking lot in Owings Mills, and turned it into the region's only transit-oriented development in the metro center. And that's a $650 million private investment that it now has ground-level retail, apartments on top, office building. I jump-started it by putting a $24 million library and branch of the community college there. And that attracts—
Can I just say it's shocking? I actually hadn't been there for a while and went there, and
I was kind of shocked by the whole thing.
It's transformative, and you would not think of Baltimore County when you look at that. But that's the value of mass transit, and that's the investments we need to take.
State Center in Baltimore City was another transit-oriented development, also some 10 years in the making, and that one's off the boards, too, for the time being. It's in litigation. The governor and the comptroller and the state treasurer, the Board of Public Works, all voted to stop that train. So what about that? Have you thought about State Center?
Absolutely. Again, the idea is to promote transit-oriented development. That's the future. Governor Hogan wants to build 20th century highways. I think the state needs to make investments for the 21st and 22nd century, and that's what TOD's transit-oriented development will do. The State Center idea is a good one. Now we're in the middle of this lawsuit. Again, no studies, no public input. The governor just comes in, pulls the plug, and announces we're going in a different direction. It's that lack of thought, and I think the lack of appreciation of the opportunities that could be there that epitomizes this governor in almost all of his decisions.
And all of the work that was done in years before he got there. One last thing on transportation, then we'll talk about Kevin Kamenetz' life story here. This has to do with industrial commercial transportation, a decision that we just found out about only within the last 10 days or so, CSX Corporation. They pulled out of this project to ask the federal government for money to have bigger tunnels through Baltimore City so they can move massive containers through Baltimore City on rail. You just can't do it now. It's not logistically impossible. What do you make of that? And is that something the governor can have any control over, the CSX's decision to pull out of that idea?
The concept here is what they call multimodal, double stacking the trains,
yes,
on the trains so that they can transport twice as much. Frankly, the economic engine of this state is the Port of Baltimore, and we need to take steps to make sure it remains as strong as it is. And there are two things that need to happen for that to occur. Number one is we need to be able to continually dredge. And the problem with dredging is you have to put the spoils at some location. We had a very successful opportunity when we filled the containment between Hart and Miller Islands in Baltimore County, and there was a lot of opposition originally, but it turned out to be environmentally sound and solved a real problem. So we need to be aggressive again in trying to find that creative solution to allow the port to be able to dredge. And it's not just the Port of Baltimore, but it's also Trade Point Atlantic, which fronts on the Chesapeake as well, because they have a port, a working port, and they're going to need to dredge too. And that's to attract the Panamax, which again, everyone's got to be larger,
right,
and, you know, it makes sense.
Right.
The more
larger ships coming through, the larger.
Save more money, yes.
Panama Canal.
So the other part, though, is we have to allow them to move ahead with the double tracking of the trains. And no one wanted a transfer station in their neighborhood, and the city went through a couple bouts, as did Howard County, and none of the neighborhoods wanted that, and I can fully appreciate that. So I thought it was a very creative solution to now come up with this newer technology that allows them to enlarge the blockage, which is at the tunnel, and by digging deeper as opposed to trying to raise the ceiling, it created that solution. So now CSX backs out of it. You know, Governor Hogan was not able to get President Trump to agree to it last year when everyone was on the table. CSX says, well, we're not making a financial commitment. I think the governor needs to be standing up and really putting a lot of pressure on CSX. First of all, if I were a shareholder of CSX, I would recognize this as an essential part of their business growth opportunity. We need to get everyone behind this. Again, the governor's just remaining silent. We need someone who's going to stand up and actually get some results.
Kevin Kamenetz is finishing his second term as Baltimore County Executive. You served how many years on the county council before you were elected executive?
16 years, and now this is my seventh year. I just completed as county executive, 23 years. I have no idea how this went by so fast. So when I was elected, I was young, I was single, I had a full head of hair and a bushy mustache. I grew the mustache to look older, and now I shaved it to look younger. I wish I had that kind of hair that I had back then. But now I'm married with two teenage sons, and I'm much wiser in age.
Let's go back a little further. You grew up in Baltimore County?
Yeah, I originally grew up in Lockhearn, and I went to Campfield Elementary School, and then we moved to Owings Mills, and I went to Gilman School starting in seventh grade and graduated from Gilman. Then I went to Johns Hopkins University, University of Baltimore School of Law. But the real story about Kevin Kamenetz is that I am the youngest of five children, and my dad had a corner drugstore in Overly on Belair Road. All five kids had to work the drugstore, but I guess somewhat to my father's sadness, not one of us became pharmacists. And I didn't really know my father because he worked day and night. The store was open 365 days a year.
What was the name of the store?
K's Pharmacy.
K's
for Kamenetz. Yeah.
Okay.
So I didn't get to know Dad until I was tall enough to reach the cash register. and actually, he didn't know. I stood on a box to reach it. But I worked in that drugstore from that moment until the day I got my first job as an assistant state's attorney, as a prosecutor in the city.
So after law school, you became an assistant state's attorney in the city, not
yes.
the county.
Yes. Yeah. I was hired by Kurt Schmoke, and I worked under both Kurt Schmoke and Stu Sims, and it was a great job. I can tell
you. Were you in the district court or a circuit court?
I worked my way up all the way through. I served over 5 years, but I tried everything from murders, robberies, rapes, assaults, thefts, everything that comes through the city courts.
And then after that, did you take a job in private practice?
I did. I went with a firm downtown, Thomas and Libowitz, where I was a trial lawyer, and I did both civil and criminal. And then I decided to run for county council, and I was elected. And I went on my own in Towson, and I conducted I had a trial practice in Towson by myself. I had two full-time jobs, both attorney as well as a council member.
If you look back on your days in the county council, what's noteworthy about your tenure there?
Well, first of all, I gained a tremendous understanding of how to run a government and what it means to be an elected official and what your obligations are. And I also learned that if I worked hard, I could actually get things done. So I was the type of guy who read every single page of every single document that crossed my desk, and I knew the issues well, and I was out in the community and got a good sense of what I thought the community wanted. But I guess using some of the skills I learned from my father's drugstore, I learned common sense and business sense, but also that ability to walk in someone else's shoes and get a feel for what that's like. I also served under two county executives for 8 years each, Dutch Ruppersberger and Jim Smith, and I was able to observe some of those wins and losses, and that really helped me govern better as county executive.
What got you interested in government? And let me ask this other question at the same time. I assume your parents were Democrats?
Yes.
Okay. So what makes you a Democrat? What makes a Democrat in your mind? And what drove you into public life?
I grew up in the early 70s, and my father, we would sit at the dinner table, and my father would rail about Richard Nixon and complain about it, and I would observe. And by the way, since when you're the youngest of five, you have to be active at that table or else you don't get fed. so you have to let your voice be heard. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of engaging in this dialogue of what was taking place at the time in government. I became a page in the House of Representatives during the impeachment proceedings of President Nixon, and that was an incredible experience. I was also involved in government class. Nick Schloeder was my teacher at Gilman, and I, by the way, in the same class.
The legendary Nick Schloeder.
Yes, well, and I'm in the same class as former Delegate Gary Brewster and former Delegate and Congressman and Governor Bob Ehrlich. So Nick Schloeder would say that of the three of us, Bob was his biggest disappointment in life. In terms of
Bob because he was a Republican?
Yes.
Okay. He wasn't at the time?
Well, I don't know. I was the president of the Gilman Political Club. Gary Brewster was the vice president, and Bobby wasn't even a member, so okay. I can't tell you. But I have to tell you, the two of them actually ran against each other for Congress,
tore our
class apart. So I hope to be the great unifier. So
yeah, the question
said, why am I a Democrat?
Why are you a Democrat? Yeah.
So I'm old enough to remember Hubert Humphrey, and my father was a Humphrey Democrat. Hubert Humphrey, 50 years ago, said this, that the moral, and I never forgot it, the moral test of government and society is how we treat those in the dawn of their lives, our children. How we treat those in the twilight of their lives, the elderly. And how we treat those in the shadow of their lives, the sick, the needy, and the disabled. That's why I'm a Democrat, because we have a moral obligation to do better. And that's why I'm running for governor.
And what drove you to public life?
I think it's a natural extension of everything I've done in my life. I mean, I'm a lawyer. I'm trained to think that way. And that's helpful because you analyze a problem and come up with a solution. And I've taken the skills that I've had, you know, as a husband and a father, as a county councilman, but, you know, as a son of a pharmacist, all of those skill sets were really, you know, we really are the sum of our life experiences. And I've tried to use each of those to help me. And I think I'm good at what I do.
So what do you want to accomplish if you were elected governor? And another question, so I'll put these side by side, what you want to accomplish and what's not being accomplished? Larry Hogan's governor. He does pretty well in the popularity polls. The economy in Maryland seems to be okay, seems to be stable, seems to be growing moderately. Why change? What's the pitch?
I think we're standing still. So maybe we're not moving backwards, but we're not moving forward. That's why you need a governor who can get real results done. And that's, again, that's my track record in Baltimore County. Let me give you some instances. So I inherited one of the oldest school systems in the country. 80% of our buildings are more than 40 years old. Plus, we had rising enrollment. So I embarked on a record $1.3 billion program to build or rebuild 90 schools, putting our kids and pulling them out of trailers and putting them into modern learning environments. And we're doing great things in the classroom as well. We're giving our children digital devices. So every elementary, every middle, and half of our high school students now have iPad equivalents. And we're finding the kids are much more engaged in the classroom. I mean, those are the, you know, that's the language these kids speak outside of the classroom. But we're also finding that the teachers are able to instantly assess the progress of every student with each lesson. And textbooks never go out of date. We've introduced a requirement in 45 schools, elementary schools, where children begin learning Spanish in fourth grade so that they are proficient in Spanish when they graduate. And they have that added value as part of graduation to help them compete for jobs in this next generation. We started early college high school last September, where 90 children are enrolled at Woodlawn High School in ninth grade. And in 4 years, they will graduate not only with a high school diploma, but an associate's degree from Community College of Baltimore County, all tuition free. And we've also done career technical education. So we're focusing on those kids who aren't necessarily going to go to college, but that they can obtain certifications in health science and automotive so that when they graduate, they instantly get a job. And importantly, in Baltimore County, our graduation rate is going up every year. We don't cook the books. We've had increasing in graduation, exceeding 90% and exceeding the state average. And importantly, in Baltimore County, there is no disparity in graduation between black and white students. These are the types of things I want to see all throughout our state. I don't think Governor Hogan is a believer in public school education. He cut $110 million in his first 2 years as governor. And in Baltimore County, that hurt our neediest of children. We were going to use that for ESOL teachers and for special ed teachers. And I know the other jurisdictions would have done the same thing. He's politicized the school construction process so much that the respected head of the state school construction program, who served under three governors, resigned in protest. He overruled his own local school boards and dictated that schools start after Labor Day, not to promote the educational outcome of children, but to sell more funnel cakes in Ocean City.
Mm-hmm. He seemed to relish the opportunity to criticize you over air conditioning in some schools too. He and the controller, Peter French.
Well, again, it just shows someone who really lacks experience in government, because our issue was he wanted me to put temporary room air conditioners in schools that are 40 years old or more. they couldn't handle the wiring to handle room air conditioners, let alone what a waste of money that would have been. We did it the same way. And as I indicated, we went from 90 schools that had no air conditioning. We're now down to 11 this year, and we'll be Actually, we're down to six, I think, and three of those remaining schools are going to be brand new schools. Mm-hmm. So
there was a lot of grandstanding on that issue.
Of course, and silliness. Yeah. And get this, Dan, for every $1 I receive from the state, I put two county tax dollars in. So we're clearly not funding enough. I mean, I'm spending $150 million a year in school construction money. The state budgets $250 million a year for the entire state. Mm-hmm. So you need a governor who's got a commitment to education, who doesn't dismiss teachers as a bunch of union thugs, who's not trying to privatize public schools with the use of vouchers, someone who's going to be a fierce advocate for education, and that's what I'll be as governor. I'm back to the Hubert Humphrey model here. This is okay. An obligation. For the moral test of government is how we take care of our children. And providing them with that sound education is our obligation.
So someone in Montgomery County, maybe not very familiar with Kevin Kamenetz, Garrett County, who's ever listening to this, Allegheny County, you've been county executive 2 terms, and you've mentioned some of your accomplishments here, some of your challenges and accomplishments, but why governor? Why do you want to be governor? And what's your pitch to those folks who don't know you that well yet?
Well, again, I'm someone who has a track record of real results, but importantly, I'm a lifelong Marylander and I'm a lifelong Democrat. We need someone who's going to stand up for Maryland values. President Trump imposed a Muslim ban and then began a campaign of terror against the immigrant community. And when the General Assembly wanted to enact reasonable protections for our immigrant neighbors, Governor Hogan dismissed it as absurd and outrageous. I passed an executive order last April that states that no county employee, including the police, can discriminate based upon someone's immigration status. It's why a year ago I wrote to the president of our 5 colleges in Baltimore County and told them that our police will not interfere with DACA students and will not enter the campuses for those purposes. It's why 2 years ago, before this was an issue, I renamed Robert E. Lee Park in Baltimore County to Lake Rowland because I knew that was a needless symbol of hate. And it's why 6 years ago, I enacted legislation in Baltimore County that protected the rights of transgender individuals. This is who I am, this is how I was raised, and this is the type of governor I will be.
Kevin Kamenetz, thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
Kevin Kamenetz was elected Baltimore County Executive in 2010. He was re-elected to that office in 2014. He is the current president of the Maryland Association of Counties and is a past president of the Baltimore Metropolitan Council. You can hear my earlier interviews with other candidates for governor in the Roughly Speaking archives. We'll be interviewing more candidates in the weeks and months ahead. Maryland's 2018 primary election takes place on June 26th. And that's our show for now. For the producers, Steve Early, Quinn Kelly, and Christina Tasek in the Baltimore Sun Newsroom, this is Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.